Thanks to all of you for being here. Tonight, here's the rules. The panelists will each ask a question in order. Each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the exact same question. Students with MSUB are going to be helping me with the timing. As the moderator, I may ask follow-up questions based on a candidate's response, or I may ask for a clarification. And candidates, you don't want to get me involved in this. Now, our candidates flipped a coin. As I understand it, Ryan Zinke won, but the old football move, he's deferred, and so Denise Juno is going to start talking first. So, with that, why don't we bring our candidates out and get this debate underway. You know, I think you're supposed to be standing next to each other. And did we figure out who's going to ask the first question? Mr. Lodi. Go ahead. Okay.
Superintendent Juno, earlier this year, the Army Corps of Engineers abruptly stopped review of the Puget Sound shipping terminal intended for Crow Coal. The Corps nixed the project at the request of Washington's Lummi tribe, which said the port violated treaty fishing rights, while the Crow argued that they, too, had a treaty right to develop their coal. But the Lummi didn't stop there. They campaigned against the Powder River Basin coal and are currently campaigning against oil and gas development in Montana and the West. They've also contributed $1,950 to your campaign, according to OpenSecrets.com. That happens to be more than they've given any Washington candidate running for Congress. What's your connection to the Lummi, and do you support their campaign?
I am a member of the Mandan Hidatsa tribes. I grew up on the Blackfeet Reservation. I've traveled the state a lot and just recently took an Indian Country tour, visited with tribal governments and community members about the issues that are important to them. Tribes know I stand on their side around tribal government sovereignty, around tribal economic self-determination. I do stand on the side of Crow Coal. I just visited with the Crow chairman today, Chairman Ol Coyote, and he actually said that Congressman Zinke hasn't talked to him for a year about what they want to go forward. You know, if it is coal on Crow, whether it's protecting the Badger 2 medicine on Blackfeet, whatever it is, and we need to find a pathway to success for tribal governments, for tribal communities. And so I do think when we look across this country and this state, I've earned the support of a lot of tribal nations. They are excited about this race and the idea that we can have the first American Indian woman serve in Congress.
Mr. Zinke?
Well, thank you. And when my opponent says she's pro-coal, I don't think anything could be further from the truth. Let me give you two examples. The first is Otter Creek. That project was $82 million. And my opponent is the only candidate that consistently voted no. Even the $82 million would go to schools and infrastructure. Secondly, with the Lummi, it is blood money. The Lummi tribe is the one that prevented the Gateway Terminal. In the words of Ol Coyote, is that a war on coal is a war on the Crow people. And for a candidate to vote against and support against a Montana tribe, a warrior tribe, over a tribe outside, is shameful. I have done everything I can to support that project. And it's the coal, the decision of the coal is the Crows. And if they want to mine their coal, my job as a representative to give them every opportunity to do so.
Next question.
I'd like to stick on that subject, Congressman Zinke, on coal. Cheap natural gas is the main reason for the demise of the coal industry and coal-fired generation. So why shouldn't lawmakers leave it to the markets to decide the future of coal, as well as for other fuel sources?
Well, cheap natural gas is certainly an effect on coal, but it's not one of the main drivers either. One of the main drivers is the regulation, over-regulation on the coal industry. And I'll say I'm a supporter of all the above, but if you would take coal out, particularly coal strip, and elevate the price of energy in Montana, it has far-reaching consequences. Far-reaching consequences in jobs, far-reaching consequences in our ability to manufacture. We're already paying higher transportation rates. You take coal out and elevate the cost even 15%, the refinery in Butte will be gone. Refinery in Billings will be gone. The refinery in Laurel will be gone. The malt Europe will be gone. So coal, all the above, but affordable energy is critical to Montana, and we have to protect that. And coal strip is the heartbeat of it.
You know, I sit on the state land board, and as a part of the state land board, we've actually done a great job of managing our public lands. And I can look, and I've voted to expand the state's largest underground coal mine. I've been down to coal strip. I've talked to the workers. I've earned the endorsement of those workers. I've earned the endorsement of Chairman Olcayo today, and him talking about I'm on the side of Crow Coal and their economic self-determination. There's nothing in this race that says I'm anti-coal. And so I am a supporter of coal. I'm a supporter of natural resource development. I have a record on that, and I'm proud of that record. We've done a great job of developing our natural resources. As far as what's going down in coal strip, there are factors that are outside of our control right now. Prices are low. Natural gas is stepping up and filling that void. I was down in coal strip. What we need to do is show some leadership and actually work with those coal-reliant communities and find a path forward. That's not happening. The workers there know I would do that as their next congresswoman. I intend to show some leadership in that area.
Becky?
Superintendent Juneau, in early August, the Washington Times reported the Obama administration granted temporary protection status to more than 8,000 Syrian immigrants who either illegally crossed our borders or overstayed their visas, allowing them to stay here for an additional 18 months. These immigrants are in addition to the 10,000 Syrian refugees resettled in the U.S. as of this past Monday. In order to meet the president's resettlement goal, the normal 18 to 24-month screening process was reduced to 3 months. Despite an admission by FBI Director James Comey that we do not have the ability to thoroughly screen Syrian nationals. This is of particular interest to Montanans as Missoula is set up to receive some of those refugees. So where do you stand on the issue of allowing the refugees into the country and into Montana, knowing the vulnerabilities in the screening process highlighted by Director Comey?
You know, when all these issues, we need to always make sure that American safety is looked out first. First and foremost, in all of these conversations, we need to make sure that comes first. My understanding is that the vetting process takes up to 2 years. That is thoroughly vetted by multiple federal agencies. And at the end of the day, we need to remember that we as Americans also have a humanitarian side. I, for one, cannot forget the images of that baby floating up on shore, fleeing atrocities that are happening in the country. Where this issue becomes a problem is when people like Congressman Zinke take votes to shut down Department of Homeland Security. That is what puts Americans at risk, safety at risk. We can do better. We need to make sure American safety is first and foremost, but we also need to remember that we have a moral center as Americans and that we can do this. Most of those people fleeing are children and families and women. And we can do better than what Congressman Zinke's been, the leadership he's been providing.
Well, let me explain what leadership is. It's keeping America first. That's America's first job. That's why I introduced the SAFE Act, to suspend the immigration and the refugee program until the three departments of jurisdiction can identify a vetting system that works. Simply waiting for 3 months or 2 years when there's no database, when you can't tell when someone's in prison and someone's not, when fingerprints don't mean anything, is not vetting. And even the FBI director, when questioned, said as much. So leadership is taking a stand and putting America first. That's what we have to do. So the idea that I voted against Homeland Defense or Homeland Security, yes, because there was an unconstitutional element of it. And part of the job of my responsibility is make sure it's constitutional. And if any bill is not constitutional, as the Fifth Circuit clearly pointed out, I will vote against it. As far as our refugees go, I'm a humanitarian. I understand it, but I've also seen it. And you should realize that women and children can be a threat if they're under the influence of evil, just like in San Bernardino, just like in Boko Haram. 4 out of 5 terrorist attacks are conducted by children. They're under the influence, oftentimes drugged.
Tom?
Yes, Congressman. In a March meeting with Billings veterans, you said vets who needed care for problems like PTSD should be working hard on recovery, but should also be required to obtain jobs. You also warned of the economic slavery of government services. That's territory a lot of lawmakers wouldn't cross into, certainly not a non-veteran. What did you mean by that?
Well, first of all veterans aren't victims. Veterans are faces. We have service jackets and records. And veterans are an essential part of our community, all of our communities. And what I've seen is this. The services that veterans required are not being given. They're waiting in line, sometimes dying in line. That's something that we can fix. But veterans themselves, and as a veteran, we have to stand together. And when we see abuse, we have to make sure we point it out. We have to help our fellow veterans wean themselves off of sometimes the dangerous cycle of economic dependency on the government. I can tell you, if you're on disability, you should use your job benefits to your benefit to make sure you're an outstanding member of the community. That's part of the obligation. To serve our country is a privilege. It doesn't end when you leave the service. So my point is this. If you're a veteran, stand. Don't be a victim. Be a part of society and be a meaningful and value-added part of society. That's the obligation of a veteran.
These issues are personal to most Montanans. They're personal to me. I have family members who have served in the military, who have served this country and done right by it. We know that I have cousins and uncles and people who are still serving in the military, and I applaud the vets and thank them so much. We owe them so much. And when I look at these issues, I know that when they are out there doing their job and they come home, that we need to fulfill our obligations. We haven't done a great job of that. We need to make sure that their health care is looked after, that they are provided high-quality health care, their mental health needs, that they get job training, that their housing is provided for. I just visited the VA in Billings recently and saw good people who work there who want to get the job done. I support the Veterans First Act, which actually looks at different components of the VA and provides accountability around the VA. The personnel also provides flexibility around funding so that we can better serve our aging veteran population. There's a better way through. You know, I talked to veterans all across the state, and they thought as a veteran that Congressman Zinke would do better. And they talk about him failing them. And so I do think that we can put a better path forward, that we can bring these personal relationships with veterans to the forefront and make sure that they're looked after.
Jackie.
Superintendent Juneau, I want to go back to Otter Creek. The state of Montana was given the Otter Creek coal tracks in a 1996 deal that preempted the New World Gold Mine project on the northeast corner of Yellowstone National Park. And as a member of the state land board, you voted against leasing that state-owned coal, which could have helped public schools and the Montana University system. I'm wondering, does your vote indicate your position on mining projects if you are elected to Congress?
You know, on the state land board, I've actually taken a vote to expand the state's largest underground coal mine. We have leased out nearly every state parcel there is to lease for oil and gas development. We have logged the state parcels over in northwest Montana, 400 million board feet, put 4,000 people to work in the woods. I'm proud of the record on a state land board. When it came to that specific vote, I talked with the landowners in the area who were opposed to it. I spoke to the Northern Cheyenne tribe who were opposed to it. And if we're going to really support tribal sovereignty, we need to listen to those. We have a constitutional duty as the state land board to generate revenue off of those state lands, which we've done. We also have a constitutional duty to look out for the future beneficiaries of this state, the young people, and make sure that those lands are going to be accessible for them. You know, we have also increased public access to tens of thousands of acres in this state. And we know that as Montanans, we cherish our public lands. We like to get outside. We like to hike and bike and fish and hunt. And those issues are important. But I've taken votes on the state land board that are pro-coal, pro-oil and gas, pro-all of the above. And I stand by that record.
There's a little inconsistency about being pro-coal when you're the only vote in the land board against Otter Creek, which is $82 million to help schools and infrastructure. It's a little disingenuous when you take money from the Lummi tribe, which is blood money, which prevented the Gateway Terminal from happening, which would allow the Crow tribe to export their coal. It's their decision. But to take money from the Lummi tribe that stopped Gateway Terminal, not just for coal, but for commodities. And also the Lummi tribe, they're the ones that have the totem pole and prayed to stop Crow coal. That is on Crow territory. It is in Billings. And that same organization supports my candidate. So if she's so pro-coal, then what I ask is that she gives the money back.
Becky, you won't.
Yeah, I just like a 30-second follow-up. I visited with the Crow Tribal Chairman today, and he understands that I am on the side of Crow Coal. He knows that I'm also on their side when it comes to other issues. He knows that I want to empower the Crow people. They are looking at hydro. I'm going to support that. I'm supporting all of their issues, not just when it comes to special interests lining Congressman Zinke's pocket. These are issues that are important to Montana. We need to make sure that all these issues are looked out for. All of these issues are important to Indian Country. All of these issues are important for Montana. We can't just cherry pick issues that we want to support.
Since we're doing follow-ups, first of all, Ms. Juno, I take offense at an accusation that special interests are lying in my pocket. I did not take a donation from the Lummi tribe. Secondly, in the answer to tribal sovereignty, no one has worked harder. I've introduced a bill for the Blackfeet Water Compact and got it further than anyone else. I introduced a bill to recognize a little shell would have been wronged. I've introduced bills to make sure the tribal and states have their rights to put tribal sovereignty back on the map. If tribes are sovereignty, then we should respect that, and sovereignty should mean something. So to make an accusation that anyone's lining my pockets, I would like an apology, because at least we should be civil. You know, even though we're in a debate back and forth, and I understand, but we should always be civil, and I would hope that both of us would stick to the issues. Thank you.
Let's be civil, people. By the way, at the end of the debate, each candidate will have 1 minute for closing statements, just so you know. Becky.
All right. Congressman Zinke, switching gears now to some veterans issues. In April 2014, we learned that at least 40 veterans died while awaiting care at a facility operated by the VA in Phoenix. It shined a light on what was revealed to be a nationwide problem and sparked public outrage, which led to a host of changes, including the development of the new Veterans Choice Program, in which veterans are referred to non-VA providers in order to receive more timely care. I've recently heard from veterans in our community that wait times are still a big issue. There is much dissatisfaction with the appointment process. Veterans suffering from serious illnesses like cancer are not being given expedited appointments or priority status, and there are serious flaws with the CHOICE program. How do we move forward in a substantive way to make sure that the medical care for our veterans is a national priority and not just some hollow benefit of signing up to serve?
First of all, I'd get a new commander in chief. Secondly, what Congress did is the VA Accountability Act. So actually, you could fire somebody. Imagine that. If someone's underperforming, not performing, then that's fire them. And they need to find something they're good at, but don't be a part of the VA. Second, the CHOICE Act, I think it's been a disaster. I talked to veterans across Montana trying to get in the system, for service providers getting paid, for trying to get an appointment. The whole thing's been a disaster. And it wasn't necessary because the VA had the power, if they couldn't make an appointment, to go out anyway. So Congress, before me, gave the VA $10 billion in the CHOICE Act. And so in Montana, the actual people providing the services, pretty good. From a group of veterans that I can tell you they're not shy about complaining. But the CHOICE Act across Montana has been a disaster. To improve it, we got to push more authority to the state in Helena and let them make the decisions rather than some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C.
I'm just going to go back for a minute about the special interest. 80% of Congressman Zinke's donations come from out of state. That's a stark difference in this campaign, where I'm getting the majority of my donations to support this Montana Made campaign from actual Montanans. I'm also, Congressman Zinke has two super PACs that he has helped hide secret money going forward. And so when we can't see special interest, that's where they are. They're helping him get elected through these super PACs. And he actually took the person who ran his super PAC and made him chief of staff when he won. We need to stop that revolving door. We need to do better around disclosing where donations to support our campaign are coming from. And when I'm in Congress, I intend to do that. You know, as far as the veterans service, we know it needs work. I visit with veterans all across this state. They are hurting. They are waiting a long time. We need to do better. The Veterans First Act is a good start. It's a bipartisan bill working its way through Congress. It's a place that provides flexibility for funding, flexible funding, so that the VA can do better at providing services to aging veterans. And we need to do better. We know that our veterans are important to all of us. It's personal to every Montanan. We have people who have served in our families. We know that we need to take care of their health needs, that we owe that to them. We can do better, and when I'm in Congress, I'm going to speak up for veterans. I'm going to stand on their side. Congressman Zinke can't even call out his presidential candidate, who has been called out by national defense experts as not being fit to be commander-in-chief. He has not called him out for denigrating a Gold Star family, and veterans are telling him that he needs to do that. It's not happening, and so I ask Congressman Zinke to step up and speak out for veterans. Do the right thing.
Candidates.
Well,
1 second.
Well, certainly in the attack mode, but I think you should probably get your facts straight. I do not have any super PACs. So if you can name the super PACs, tell me what I have, because I don't, and that is a patent lie. And I have to tell you, you're a lot like Hillary, is that you have a problem telling the truth. Secondly, my donors, I can tell you, Montana has one congressman. And you have to have a stronger and louder voice than the 55 congressmen and members from California. We have one voice. And so when I speak that voice, and I have thousands of donors, low-dollar donors, that believe in the same thing we do, a strong America, a strong defense, a policy that has illegal immigration is wrong. Following the law is correct. Making sure we honor the Constitution. Those are the values, and those are the people that support me.
Candidates, I'm the umpire, and I'm not expanding the strike zone. So let's keep the time to where it's supposed to be. What do you say? Also, don't try to hijack the debate here. These people have been working hard to come up with some really great questions. We ought to get to them.
I would love to.
All right. Tom?
Superintendent Juneau, if the Supreme Court backs President Obama's guidance on transgender bathrooms in public schools, this is something you're familiar with, how should the House respond?
You know, I travel around this state a lot, and I visit schools. I step into classrooms all the time and see great learning going on. I know local school boards are doing the right thing. And first and foremost, when they are making decisions, is safety of every student. They want to make sure every student who steps through a public school door and classroom has a safe learning environment. I know local schools have already been dealing with this issue. That's where this issue belongs. They've been working on this issue. What came forward was guidance, not rules. And I do believe that schools are doing the right thing, and they're going to tackle this issue with their communities, with local boards of trustees. And I just am so proud of Montana's public education system and the work that they do, and the work that I've been able to do of increasing graduation rates across the state to historic highs, of making sure that every student feels safe in their school, that every student can step into a classroom and have a high quality teacher.
Time.
That just very proud of our system.
Well, this is where leadership steps in. We have to support Montana values and not Washington, D.C. values. So when our president dictates something and it's wrong, we need to stand. We shouldn't be silent. And yes, Obama needs to get out of our bathrooms. He does. Secondly, you need to stand on issues of national importance and not be silent. You need to stand against this administration about Iran. Iran's launching ICBMs with destruction of Israel on the side. That's wrong. We need to stand against that. We need to stand against illegal immigration, against unvetted refugees. We need to stand against. So this is what leadership does. Leadership stands on Montana values and not Washington, D.C.
Jackie.
I missed the question from the audience.
About 75% of Montana wheat is exported to Asia. That's why the Montana Grain Growers Association support the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. What is your position on TPP?
I voted for TPA because I wanted to see it in detail, because it needed sideboards. The TPP, and I think that probably the best advice I was given before I took the job was from Conrad Burns. He said, son, never vote against ag. So the TPP is good for ag. It's not particularly good for labor or other parts. What should have happened is this. We should have negotiated a bilateral between Japan and ourselves. But either way, both candidates on the presidential side have vocalized their opposition to TPP. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think at the end of the day, it's probably going to be renegotiated. I hope it gets renegotiated with a bilateral between Japan and ourselves, because we're similar countries. But when you bring in Brunei and New Zealand, these other countries that are so different than ours, out of negotiation comes something that is what we have today. It was misnegotiated.
I'm a supporter of fair trade, and I think any agreement that is decided needs to be fair to Montana workers, fair to American workers. The TPP is not that. It doesn't provide enough security, enough fairness to American workers, so I oppose the TPP. My opponent, Congressman Zinke, actually voted to take a fast-track vote to give President Obama the ability to fast-track this trade agreement without congressional oversight. They get to put some people on it, but they don't get to say anything. They get to sit in a room and watch President Obama make those decisions. I am for fair trade. I believe that Congress should have oversight. I believe that they should have a say. And when I'm in Congress, I'm going to make sure that happens.
Follow up. Actually, I voted for the TPA because included in it were provisions that put sideboards on it and make sure our negotiators, congressional negotiators, were at the table. I was not comfortable with the way it was. And I voted for TPA also so all of us could see the agreement. Before that provision was put in place, the TPA, the fast track, would have been put in place and none of us would be able to see it. So I voted for transparency and make sure everyone saw that document and everyone benefited from what I did. Thank you.
Okay, Superintendent Juneau, nationally since 2002, states have been under pressure from the federal government to increase their graduation rates, which has given rise to many alternatives to traditional schools and education. And while these new options secure federal funding for public schools, the Brookings Institution found that it wasn't enough for a student to simply earn a regular high school diploma. They needed to actually achieve a GPA of at least 2.5 to reap the long-term social and economic benefits, suggesting that bending the rules and lowering standards may actually hurt young people more than it's helping them. So using your experience as the superintendent of public instruction for Montana, what would you do to influence the national debate over not only ensuring federal funding for our schools, but also improving the educational outcomes and the long-term success rates for students nationally?
Well, the question should be, what have I done? As your state superintendent, I've actually worked with communities all across the state, all across Montana. When I stepped into office, I saw that there was a challenge in front of us. We needed to increase graduation rates. I've worked with communities across Montana. We have 450 small businesses at the table. We have great public-private partnerships. That work that's going on in these communities under my leadership has actually provided record high graduation rates, boosting our economy by millions, $6 million annually to the Montana economy. I'm proud of that record. I'm proud of what Montana's public schools are doing to address that issue. If Congressman Zinke hadn't taken a vote to slash Pell Grants, those students would actually have more opportunity to go to college. When I'm in Congress, I'm actually going to support pipelines of skilled workers. I'm going to find ways to support our two-year colleges, our university system, and I'm going to make sure that families and students have access to federal aid so that they can go to college.
You know, actually, I supported Pell Grants to be available for vocation, too. And you want to talk about student loans? I think it's unconscionable that the government makes about $122 billion over 10 years off student loans. That's right. Our government makes profit off student loans. That's wrong. As far as other accusations against me, I was also looked at misquoting that OPI's budget was up 65%. Well, I verified it. I'm sorry, it was only up 52%. And I thought that 52% was interesting, because that's the same percentage of students that are not proficient in English and math. So you can take victory laps about raising graduation, which I think is important, but graduation is going up, student test scores are going down. When 52% of our students are not proficient in math or English, I don't think it's a victory lap.
Tom?
Can I respond to that?
Congressman, in Monday's debate in Fraser, you suggested the Land and Water Conservation Fund needed to be reformed. What did you mean by that?
Well, three things. One is the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which I support. And actually, I'm the only one of the delegation that voted for it when it needed to be to make sure it was extended 3 years. But reform should come in three ways. Number one, we need to broaden the revenue. The revenue is single source, and that's offshore oil. I think it's risky and unsustainable in the long term. Secondly, we need to streamline the process. There's too much bureaucracy and too much overhead, and like all government agencies over time, the bureaucracy grows. And lastly, we need to put in place some mechanism to reward collaboration between local, state, and federal, whether that's giving it, you know, more points on a rewarding a grant, or ensuring there's some sort of collaboration, but collaboration is important. So those are the reforms that I would support.
The Land Water Conservation Fund does a lot for Montana. We like to be outdoors. We have a long tradition of an outdoor heritage of hiking and biking and hunting and fishing. And, you know, on the State Land Board, I've actually increased access to our public lands of tens of thousands of acres. I'm proud of that record. As far as Congressman Zinke's comments, four times he said the LWCF needs to be reformed. What needs to happen with the LWCF is it needs to be reauthorized and fully funded. What's the problem here is not the money. The money's there. What the problem is the leadership. We haven't had the leadership in Congressman Zinke to actually lead the effort to reauthorize and fully fund the LWCF. The LWCF, you know, I announced my public lands priorities at Spring Meadow Lake in Helena. I just visited Lake Elmo yesterday. Those are places where Montanans and their families like to get out and recreate. Those are the things that LWCF pays for and helps us contribute to our public lands.
Time.
When I'm in Congress, I'm going to lead that effort.
Jackie.
Superintendent Juneau, the outcry over the cost of the EpiPen is just the latest in the controversies over prescription drug prices. Do you think Congress needs to be involved in controlling the cost of these prescription drugs?
I think when I visit Montanans across the state, I hear about rising prescription costs all the time. I hear of people who need to make decisions around getting life-saving medicine, putting food on the table, or paying their rent. Those are critical issues that we need to address. We need to find ways that we can make sure that we are reducing those costs, that we're holding them steady, and put Montana buyers back into the driver's seat. There are ways I think that Congress can help regulate that industry. I think there are ways that we can move forward and make sure that Montanans have access to the critical medicine that is necessary. When we were in Fraser, right after the debate, I met this lady who actually said and talked about the EpiPen, how that is going out, it's out of her reach now to re-up that as much as she needs to, and she's making these hard decisions. I think with my leadership in Congress, we'll get there and we'll do better.
Well, I do think Congress has a role in price gouging. When an industry is taking advantage and a drug or a treatment or a device becomes cost prohibitive, I think there's a role for the government. There's also a role, you know, I have a healthcare advisory in Montana. And overall, Obamacare has been a disaster. And I agree, the goal was noble. No, I agree.
Come on.
I agree the goal was noble. Access, affordability, quality care. But what's happened is, remember the promise? If you like your doctor, you can keep him. If you like your insurance, you can keep him. That's a lie. So what we have are, in Montana, we have rising rates, probably around 60%. It's no longer affordable every month. $1,200 for an average family. Deductibles are $13,000. You can't have preventative medicine under those cases. So the problem is, it's one size fits all. We need to look at a Montana solution that makes sense in rural areas and frontier like Montana.
Congressman Zinke, the relationship between the United States and Russia has been strained for years, and tensions between the two countries increased in August when, for the very first time, Russia launched military strikes from an Iranian military base, supposedly to attack ISIS. A skeptical Obama administration counters the strikes were meant to take out opponents of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who is one of Russia's staunchest allies. The strikes are seen as a shift in the dynamics of the conflict, and Defense Secretary Ash Carter says Russia has, in a sense, poured gasoline on the fire. In your opinion, how serious a threat does the increasing relationship between Iran and Russia present, and what, if anything, can and should the U.S. do to manage it?
What is a serious threat? And this is what happens when you form a vacuum, when you put lines in the sand, red lines, and don't follow it, when you say something and your words are meaningless. It is a problem. Russia's not our enemy per se, but they're definitely an aggressor. Iran remains our enemy. I think even you're looking at as bad as ISIS and Al-Qaeda, Iran still is this principal funder of terrorism. They have military operating groups in the territory of Iraq and Syria. And when you have two powers like Russia and the U.S. in the same airspace with different objectives on the ground, catastrophe will happen. And this is where leadership needs to come in. What are we going to do with Assad? This administration has never answered that key question. Should he go or should he stay? We need to answer that question and do this. We probably need a military-led, but it needs to be a coalition force. And we need to make sure we have a sanctuary area that refugees feel safe in. It will take resolve and commitment, but right now, our enemies don't fear us, and our allies don't trust us. And what we will never resolve unless we are willing to say what we mean and mean what we say.
Again, I think when looking at any of these issues, American safety has to come first. We need to collaborate when we can and confront when we must. And sometimes we have to work with people that we don't like. I think that's the issue in a lot of these things as we look forward. But when we do, you know, when there, we need to go into these isolated areas, these pockets of instability, and figure out what to do. America does need to lead. But we need to work with our friends. We need to sometimes work with people we don't like to get the job done. But I do know when we send troops in and we put boots on the ground, we need to make, we have the best military in the world. We do. And when they hit the ground, we need to make sure that they are outfitted, that they are trained, they have the best equipment. And when they come home, we need to make sure that we are taking care of their needs and meeting our obligations to our veterans.
Tom?
Superintendent Juneau, you said last week that if there was one thing Congress accomplished next year for Indian Country, it would be to invest in tribal economic development. Yet in the past, some of these investments have not ended well. There was a $9.3 million Health and Human Services funding of the POCA project on the Blackfeet Reservation that was hurt by a $4.6 million embezzlement scheme in 2012. There was $33 million in stimulus funding for the Tiber Project on the Rocky Boys Reservation that was hurt by $650,000 in a bribes and kickback scheme. The Crow Tribal Historic Preservation Office employees overcharged the National Park Service $500,000 for archaeological work necessary to expand a coal mine. How does Congress make sure the economic development funding you want is, in fact, funding economic development?
Well, I think you just said it. There are safeguards in place to make sure when bad actors are doing bad things that they are caught and brought to justice. What I do know, and I just laid out my Indian Country priorities, I visited with tribes across this state, tribal government, sat down with them. You know, like I said, I just spoke with Chairman Olcayot today, who said Congressman Zinke hasn't spoken to him for over a year. We need our Congress people to actually be reaching out and touching base with these tribal governments to know what their pathway forward is. They do need economic development. And when I'm in Congress, I'm going to make sure I'm working with the tribes hand in hand to determine what that economic future looks like. These treaty obligations that we signed that are upheld by the U.S. Constitution means that we have obligations as a country to Indian governments in the areas of health, safety, and education. There's been a lot of broken promises. Congressman Zinke's been a part of that, and I intend to do better.
Jackie.
Well, and actually, I've been to every tribe and talked to the councils, and you know, I remain honored to be their congressman. Corruption is everywhere, and to just highlight, you know, a tribe or two. I mean, you want to look at corruption? Look at Washington D.C. That's probably the most corrupt town in this country. So I think, what at the end of the day, is you look at transparency. When Congress authorizes something, just make sure the books are clean. You know, do audits, hold people accountable. It's the same stuff. And the tribes, they are sovereign. And it is better to invest than and empower to put a person, any person, dependent. So I'm a believer in the tribe's ability to manage their own affairs. I think so. But I can tell you the regulation in tribal country is far more than off tribal country. And so if you want to be fair, then make the regulations easy and stop putting hurdles in the way of tribal health and tribal economic development.
Jackie.
As we sit here in Montana, there's a storm bearing down on Florida. And the U.S. is just seeing a record number of natural disasters, flooding in Louisiana, hail here in Billings, and of course, wildfires in California. And in many cases, residents are clamoring for assistance, and the affected residents turn to the federal government, to the taxpayers, to bail them out. So I ask you, what about the National Flood Insurance Program, for example? How does Congress pay when disaster strikes?
Well, let's look at something close to home, forest fires. My bill, the Resilient Federal Forest Act, adjusts the wildfire problem so the Forest Service doesn't have to pay all their budget fighting forest fires. But it has to go deeper than that. You got to go at the core. And I'll quote Dale Bosworth, the former chief of the U.S. Forest Service. We don't have a fire problem. We have a land management problem. So we need to do a lot better at managing our fires, at managing our forests. And we're 71 million acres behind in just removing dead and dying timber and treating our forests. Last year, we spent $2 billion fighting forest fires. We can do better. First, the Resilient Federal Forest Act, I think it's a good bill. It was bipartisan. And two points that you support, collaboration and adjusting the wildfire, are in it, which is important. But yeah, I think a lot of it is management, is don't wait until a crisis. Be a leader and get out in front of a crisis. As a former military officer, I think that's what you do. You plan ahead so you don't have the crisis and you're always in a state of chaos.
You know, I run a state agency, and if I had to spend up to half my budget fighting forest fires throughout the year, I wouldn't be able to do my job of managing and doing the job that the Office of Public Instruction has to do. That's what's happening. We need to make sure forest fire funding is set aside like any other natural disaster so that money can be pulled from, so that the agency that's in charge can actually do the job of managing the lands that's necessary. Congressman Zinke's not led on that issue. We need to make sure that happens. On state land board, like I said, we put 4,000 people to work in the woods. We have developed those lands and managed them to create 400 million board feet of timber for this state. I'm proud of that record. We do a great job, and I know that when an agency is not starved out, they can do better too. And when I'm there in Congress, I'm going to make sure that that happens.
Becky.
Superintendent Juneau, in November of 2015, following a 7-year process of review and 5 comprehensive studies, the President denied the required presidential permit for the Keystone XL project, which was a proposed 1,179-mile cross-border crude oil pipeline that would have run through northern and eastern Montana through South Dakota and Nebraska. The President's permit denial was the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, for the project and for the estimated thousands of jobs it would have created. If there is an opportunity for this particular project to be resurrected, would you support a move to move forward with it?
As I would just point to my land board record again and the work that we've done that. We actually approved an on-ramp that I took a vote for if the Keystone XL pipeline were created. We know in this state what happens when pipelines leak. We've lived it, you've lived it here in Billings under the Yellowstone River. My leadership on the land board actually provides companies now to dig deeper than they ever have before. My leadership on the land board has actually put term leases in place for oil companies so that they have to come back and check this out and explain how their process is working and how those breaches might be happening. I'm proud of that work. I think as it moves forward, we certainly need to look at development, all these issues as they come in front of Congress and there are votes taken. I'm going to make sure that I'm working with Montanans, and I'm going to do the best thing by Montanans. And we need to work with them. We need to listen to them. We need to decide with them. And that's what our U.S. Congressperson should do.
Well, let me show you a little leadership. The answer is yes. Yes. It is better to transport fuel and commodities and oil through a pipeline than it is running overground on a rail. The number of variabilities running rail is far greater than the pipeline. The Keystone Pipeline was the most greatest, smartest, engineered product in the history of this nation. It was safe. Even the EPA said it was safe. Even the EPA said it was safe. It was safe. We should build it. We should build it now. And there's one president, one nominee that is committed to build this, and that president is Donald Trump.
Ladies and gentlemen, we finished with the Q&A aspect of this debate, and now we get into our closing statements, and we will start with Denise Juno.
There is a stark contrast in this race. You have someone in me, in my candidacy, who will never vote to transfer or sell off our public lands. Never. You have someone in me as your next representative who has actually done a good job on behalf of Montana and made progress, raising graduation rates to historic highs. And those diplomas mean that those students are better prepared than ever before for college, for career, and for their military. I'm proud of the record of my tenure as superintendent and the job that public school teachers are doing, that public schools are doing, and that communities are doing to serve their public schools. I'm proud of the record on the state land board and making sure that we are doing the right thing and managing and making sure there are jobs and that we are doing the right resource development. Proud of that record. And Congressman Zinke, you have somebody who has not done the job for Montana, somebody who is not looking out for everyday Montana, someone who's more interested in getting on the 24-hour news cycle, being out stumping for Trump and missing critical votes that matter to Montana instead of actually doing the job. Just on the radio yesterday, he was on there talking about what his next political gig's going to be rather than doing the job that he's elected to do. We need somebody in this seat who's actually going to do the job that you elect them to do, that they put Montana's people, land, and economy first and aren't always eyeing what's next for Ryan Zinke. We need to make sure Montanans are looked out for, and as your next Congresswoman, I will do that. I ask for your vote in November.
Congressman?
First of all, to say that I support transfer or sale public land is disingenuous. PBS has said that. Verbatim has said that. Independent, the Billings Gazette has also said that. That's a lie. Secondly, as I represent all Montana, for a reason, as I have a plaque on my door that says my office belongs to the citizens of Montana, I tell you, my office and my vote is not mine, it's yours, for a reason, is because I represent all of us. It's an honor and a privilege. But to say that I want to sell public lands, or to say that I miss critical votes, the vote, I would rather bring the next president of the United States to Montana and show him Montana than miss three procedural votes and one other vote that couldn't even muster 25% to pass. So that's a critical vote? I don't think so. Check your facts. The reason is this, is that leadership is standing. And we may agree or disagree, but I pledge this, I will always listen, and I will always do what's in the best interest of our country in Montana, as I have always done as a member of the SEAL teams, as a state senator, and as your congressman. Lastly, it is Suicide Prevention Month. So on your way home, I ask that all of us think about what we as Montanans can do better. And also, please give your prayers to Mike Fellows. With that, God bless America, and God bless all the troops that defend her. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to thank Congressman Zinke and his opponent, Democrat Denise Juneau, for their participation in tonight's debate. We'd also like to, as you said, wish Mike Fellows very well. We want to offer our thanks to our panelists for the hard work that you guys did and the collaboration you did to come up with tonight's questions. Finally, we express our gratitude to MSUB for hosting tonight's event. And for the Billings Gazette's Yellowstone Public Radio and Color 8 Television, I want to thank you, the audience, for taking the time to get yourselves informed before you go vote on November 8th. Thank you very much, and good night, everybody.
Thank you.